I'm very pleased to be here, and I thank Telfer for his hospitality. Would it be easier if I hold this in my hand? Perhaps I'll do that, yes. That's great. Thank you very much. Now, what I'm going to be speaking about tonight is the subject of media self-censorship and also the threat of government censorship. And I want to begin by suggesting that we are in a state of crisis. This is obvious in several respects. Canada is at war. Canadian soldiers are participating in the occupation of Afghanistan. Canada is effectively at war in Palestine because Canada is participating in the blockade of Gaza, which is an act of war. Now, there's a crisis of information. And I think one way of talking about that crisis is to think about the fact that among young Canadians, let's say 30 years and younger, I would think one of the favorite news sources that they make use of is not one of the so-called real news programs, but a comedy show, The Daily Show. Or perhaps instead they watch The Colbert Report, or perhaps The Mercer Report, or perhaps they get their news from the web programs of The Onion, or perhaps they watch one of my favorites, a satirical program known as Better Bad News. Now, what these programs have in common is that they are parodies of the official, the corporate news media. They involve the same kind of structure. They have solemn or perhaps not so solemn news anchors. They have panels of supposed experts. They have earnest exchanges between news anchors and reporters, who are always described as the senior correspondent of this, that, or the other thing. And interviews with bemused, ignorant, or stunned members of the general public. Now, I think that the existence of these programs is one symptom of the fact that the real news, in inverted commas, is systematically fake. I think we can also see symptoms of the fact that the corporate news is systematically censored in such phenomena as the annual publication in the United States by a group of scholars at Sonoma College of a book. Most recent issue of this book is Censored 2010. Last year, of course, it was Censored 2009. This book is devoted to covering the top 25 censored news stories of the previous year. And they have no difficulty whatsoever in finding each year 25 or more stories of major importance that are systematically censored in the North American media. Now, if we look at, I'm just going to say a little bit more about the corruption and the censorship that is a feature of our information sources, and then I'm going to say something about the implications of this for Canadians' understanding of what the American Empire is up to in its aggressions against the Muslim world. A number of recent books tell us, indicate quite clearly to us, that scholars of media studies are aware of a crisis. There's one book with the title True Lies, another one, End Times, The Death of the Fourth Estate. The Fourth Estate, of course, is a common way of referring to the news media. The Crisis of Public Communications, or the classic study by Edward Herman and Noam Chomsky, Manufacturing Consent, the Political Economy of the Mass Media. Now, the leading American media scholar, Robert McChesney, has remarked that At the very beginning, at the founding, in the founding period of the American Republic, two of the most important founding figures, Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, remarked that the real dangers to the survival of democratic forms and constitutional rule in the United States were militarism and class inequality. They predicted that if these two things were allowed to flourish, they would be followed by corruption, secrecy, oligarchy, and a loss of liberty. Now, Jefferson and Madison both believed that the crucial task of a free press was to oppose inequality by giving poor Americans, propertyless Americans, access to accurate and honest information. And that another function of the free press would be to monitor militarism on behalf of the public and prevent rulers of a rich land from following their imperial ambitions. Now, quite obviously, the media on this continent have failed in any watchdog function of that sort. They've also failed in a larger sense by devaluing democracy. Perhaps one might say devaluing our sense of values in general. Noam Chomsky and Edward Herman pointed out more than 20 years ago that we are commonly deceived in our understanding of what's going on, of what basic transaction is involved when we buy and read a newspaper. We think that we are purchasing independently assembled information, the cost of assembling it being partly paid, of course, by the advertisers whose advertisements appear in the paper. In fact, Herman and Chomsky insist, what's really happening is that we are being sold by the news organ to its advertisers. That, they say, is the real transaction that is involved in the corporate media. And of course, the power of the advertisers governs what it is that is presented by the newspapers, by the television news programs, as news. It may not be a deliberate form of censorship, because of course the news editors have internalized the values of their advertisers. What it means, of course, is that whole stories, whole classes of stories, are not news. They're beyond the horizon of what is acceptable. And of course, when we're exposed to a system of mass deception, our values are bent and twisted. It's also, of course, the case that the news media and the advertising they carry, as critics since the 1960s have observed, Paul Barron and Paul Sweezy, I'm thinking of in particular, authors of a book entitled Monopoly Capital, they observed that the real danger from advertising is that it helps to shatter and ultimately destroy our most precious non-material possessions. The confidence in the existence of meaningful purposes of human activity and respect for the integrity of man. The values that are attacked would, of course, include religious values. And the point is that our sense of the importance of things like democracy, freedom, cultural diversity, equality, education, community, love, health, human development, are reduced to the status, these things are all reduced by advertising to the status of commodities produced by the market. The values are in effect being emptied out. Now, I want to talk about the effects of this kind of structure of deception. We had earlier this evening that very amusing short video showing one American politician after another parroting the panic news, 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, terror, 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 and so on. Now, I think that it's important to recognize that the events of 9/11 were an attack both, or they, they, facilitated an attack on the Muslim world, a series of attacks on the Muslim world. They were primarily an attack upon American democracy, or at least what remained at that point of American democracy. One of the things they facilitated was, of course, the destruction of constitutional government in the United States. The American Bill of Rights has come to mean virtually nothing, because all of its protections are systematically cancelled by legislation like the Patriot Act. Now, I think it's important to understand, in terms of the suppression of news, how systematically news about 9/11 itself has been suppressed by the North American media. A friend and colleague of mine, Professor Graham McQueen of McMaster University, has recently done a study of the news of the day of 9/11, and he's observed how quickly certain kinds of things that were observed by journalists and newscasters on the day of 9/11 disappeared from the news cycle. They observed, for example, that there were bombs going off in the World Trade Center buildings. There are many news reports from the day of 9/11 in which that is reported. Now, that was in effect suppressed. Many other things have been suppressed. I think it's important to understand that courageous scientific investigators in the United States and elsewhere have been doing very thorough work on the material evidence relating to the attacks of 9/11. They have been able to demonstrate, I think, entirely conclusively that the three towers that were destroyed in the attacks of 9/11, the Twin Towers and Building Number 7, which was itself large enough, they were 110 stories tall, it was 47 stories high, that these were destroyed not by the impact of the aircraft, that's agreed, of course, by the official story. The aircraft, of course, created fires. The official story is that the fires then destroyed parts of the building and brought the rest down. The scientific evidence, I won't go into detail, but I would invite you to consult the online Journal of 9/11 Studies, where you'll find many of these scientific papers available. That evidence shows quite conclusively that the buildings were destroyed by planned demolition. And now that, of course, completely alters one's understanding of what the event itself was about. I remember when I began, sometime after the event, to think critically about what had happened, being puzzled by the absence of the American Air Force on the day of 9/11. It has since been revealed that the American Air Force was not there because exercises that had been planned and that had been kept secret, the evidence of this didn't emerge until 2004, had effectively disabled the American air defense system. The airliners that crashed into the Twin Towers, the airliner that crashed into the Pentagon, and the other one that crashed in the ground in Pennsylvania, these airplanes were able to float around the sky in the northeastern United States for nearly 2 hours without interference, because the senior people in the United States government had systematically disabled their own air defenses in order to make the attacks succeed. Now, I won't go into further detail about the nature of those attacks, but I would like to emphasize that the effect was a double effect. It legitimized a program of aggressive geopolitics, including war on Afghanistan, war against Iraq, and the planners of the event no doubt hoped that they would also in the future be able to follow this up with wars on other countries, including, of course, Iran. The geopolitical interests were, of course, as many of you know, sketched out before the Bush regime came to power in 2001 by a group calling itself the Project for a New American Century. all the senior figures in that organization became senior members of the Bush administration. Now, what I'm talking about may be unfamiliar to you, and I think we should ask ourselves why. Why is it that we don't know that respected scientists have published scientific studies that systematically disprove the official story of how those buildings collapsed, and therefore systematically disprove as well the entire narrative about 9/11? Why do we not know that? We don't know it because of this system of media control and of deception that I began by talking about. Let me give you one interesting example of what can happen when the media system inadvertently or through the honesty and integrity of newscasters and reporters in the system create an opening in what is generally a kind of blank wall. A year and a half ago, Professor Graham McQueen and I were invited to participate in the program, the TVO program agenda hosted by Steve Paikin, for a debate on the scientific evidence relating to 9/11. We debated against two Americans. The program was a full hour.